Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Slight angle to the left. Good snap, put down, kick is up by Ficken. The kick by Sam Ficken is good. And Penn State's on the board, and it's a one-score game with 3:45 to go in the third.
Adams will run the option to the boundary side. He makes the pitch late to Batts. Batts has an option to cut it in the middle. Now to the middle of the field to the 35-30, 25-20, 15-10, 5, touchdown, Javon Batts.
Sam Ficken, 25-yard attempt. Good snap, put down by Kaiser. Kick is up by Sam Ficken. The kick is good. It's 10-6 Rutgers. 13 minutes to go in the fourth.
Here's the rollout by Leiby. Throws it downfield. It's complete. First down and maybe the touchdown by Adams. And he is into the pylon. Adams smartly finds the corner of the end zone. Stretches the ball out over the pylon. And it's 6 for the Seal.
Second and goal at the 5. Near hash. Takes the snap. Gives the ball to Belton through the hole. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the lead with 1:13 to go.
Back to pass, Schlegel. Schlegel with some pressures and hits split. Split to the 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Chekalemi. Split went right between the defenders, and yep, he split them. And the cannon goes off as the Braves get on the board.
Takes the snap. Back he goes on 3rd and 7. Loads it up. Fires for Hamilton. Got it midfield. Breaks the tackle. 45. Near side 40. 35. Hamilton to the 30. To the Rutgers. 26-yard line. First down, Penn State.
Batts. Batts turns the corner. Breaks 2 tackles and he is gone. And he is absolutely in the end zone, 65 yards.
Steps up, throws downfield. It's intercepted by Ryan Kaiser, and the Nittany Lions have closed it out in style.
Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And Kevin, is it a new vehicle again this week?
Yeah, we're featuring the 2015 Kia Optima SXL Turbo.
Beautiful. What a car that is.
Actually, Facebook and tweeted the information on the car earlier today. So check it out, at Kevin Herr on Twitter and also on Facebook. I'll tell you more about it next hour.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and he mentioned the Kia. Well, that's Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dave Bryan's going to be in to talk about the Steelers a little bit later in the show. Dave Revson, BTN on tomorrow. Tony Knopf, CEO, Spotlight Ticket Management, to ruin Kevin's week on Wednesday.
That's great.
Well, I think I'd rather talk about the business of sports than talk about the TMZ of sports, which unfortunately is ruining sports.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you right there on this particular situation. I would much rather do that. Bob Buehner joining us here in the eastern version of the Sunbury Motors studio today.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Steve. And how was your weekend? Poor Kevin was off.
Yes. Look, the Vikings have decided they're going to play Adrian Peterson. Right. You're in a very delicate balance when you're in sports right now, when you're dealing with legal situations, because you're sitting there and you're supposed to mete out justice based on an indictment or an accusation. Now, we know he hit him. He says he did. All right. We know that with the switch. Okay. I mean, I understand that. But sports entities are really being put in a rough spot where isn't there a legal system to take care of this? Now, if I'm Lou Wolf and the Vikings, how would I handle it? Well, off the cuff, I probably would handle it this way. I would suspend him without pay until it was resolved one way or the other.
Well, that could take a year.
Well, but I'm not taking away his livelihood. I'm suspending him with pay.
Oh, with pay.
With pay. I would suspend him with pay until it's resolved one way or the other. In other words, I don't play him, but I still pay him because that way he still has his livelihood. But at the same time, I'm not going to allow him to, play with this specter hanging over him, especially now in this day and age. Everyone has access, and they saw the pictures of the young man's thighs, backside, and so forth, which he got hit. There's no doubt about that. And again, I'm not in charge of how to discipline a child or anything like that. That's not my area of expertise. But at the same time, you are in a very precarious spot right now in terms of discipline. So I don't want to take away his livelihood in terms of the money part of it. But for the moment, I'm not going to let you play until I'm told one way or the other.
Tough call. I would allow the legal system, obviously, to run its course, but NFL football teams and the NFL itself are just not equipped. They weren't established to handle these types of things. That's why, as you said, Steve, and I support this, is that that's why we have a criminal justice system to do this, and not we should allow that to take its course. And here it's highly complicated by the obvious fact that parents do have a right to discipline their children. Now, no one's been ever able to come up with a test that says when does discipline cross over into abuse. And there is very little guidance on this from a system that is equipped to handle it. So how can we expect the NFL or an NFL team owner or ownership to handle it when the criminal justice system hasn't been able to draw that line? And they haven't. As a prosecutor for 20 years, I had any number of these types of things where is it discipline, is it abuse? And sometimes you let a judge decide. Sometimes I would make the judgment call myself.
Part of my judgment call as to why I would suspend him with pay is that my consumer's mad at me right now. And in my business, my consumer's mad. And I'm not going to take away his livelihood, thus his paycheck, thus allowing him to defend himself. But at the same time, because my consumer's looking at me cross-eyed right now saying, well, gee, you know what, I saw the pictures. See, and that, I think that's the tough spot you're in. So, in other words, come up with some sort of compromise that doesn't completely undercut the legal system, but at the same time, you look at your consumer and try to have some credibility with them.
But are those fans really the ones that are agitating? Are those fans the ones who are not supporting Adrian Peterson? Or is it a bunch of outside special interest groups who are obviously and sincerely concerned about child abuse, and now they have a cause?
That's a good point. That's a good point. And the media drives this. I mean, and that's why I think part of what you're trying to say.
Yes. And Steve, we've all seen what locally in the middle part of Pennsylvania, what a media-driven witch hunt can do. Because, like in war, the first casualty is the truth. And everybody has an agenda. And so I pull back a little bit, and I understand the hysteria, but it's not generated by Minnesota Viking fans who are going to boycott games. It's not generated by fans who may not get to the games, but they buy the T-shirts, they listen on radio or television, they're actively supporting a team. That's not the group that's behind the outcry, that is, at least from what I perceive. And it's sort of like, by way of analogy of what we've talked about with you and Kevin over this past year, is the brouhaha over the Redskins names. The Redskins fans, the polls, 70% of the country says it's okay to have that name. It's probably close to 100% of the fans. And so we've got a lot of forces at play. The media, which is striving for ratings to bust a big story, to get the attention, they've got an interest in this. It's financial. It's who can get the biggest interview, et cetera. And all of these are working at cross currents.
Right. Well, okay, the Sunday night TV rating was down, right, from the year before. So, I mean, So there's that little bit of impact so far. The Bears beat the 49ers last night 18% from the opener. 15%. You're talking about the Chicago market, which is really good watching this game. They say 23.69 million viewers watched last week's Sunday night game as opposed to 19.43. So they lost 4 million viewers in a week.
But what can we attribute that to, Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson? Or is it Jay Cutler's the quarterback for the Bears? And so I don't want to make light of it, but...
But you have Chicago and San Francisco, which are two of the top five television markets in the country.
True.
And the fact is that San Francisco, now they're playing in Santa Clara, they're 45 miles away. So San Francisco becomes an even bigger market for them to make sure they have watching the game.
But wipe out the entire East Coast media market on this one, because as much as you and I would follow the Bears and the Niners for a lot of good reasons,
sure,
a few Penn State players on the rosters of each team, et cetera, I think from Maine to Florida, it was probably a big yawner of a game.
That's what I was thinking, too. I mean, if you have an East Coast team involved in I wonder if the numbers are different.
Guys, this is where you're... Guys. Okay, check it in at the door, okay? All right? This is the National Football League. The reason the NFL is incredibly popular is Seattle played Denver in the Super Bowl, and 120 million people watched, okay? Done. I know you want to overanalyze it. Don't. Okay? You can't. All right? The NFL has already established itself. It doesn't really matter who's playing in the game. That's the difference between the NFL and the NBA. In the NBA, you need LeBron James and whomever the team of the year happens to be with him playing against the Lakers, the Celtics, or somebody. Okay? In order to draw the rating that they draw. I've always said that we will find out the success of the NBA when Utah plays Atlanta and the rating's the same. Right now, the rating wouldn't be the same. So I know, Kevin, you want to do the East Coast thing. You got to take yourself out of the 80s and 90s, big boy, and you got to bring yourself to 2014. The NFL across the board, it doesn't matter who plays the game. They get great ratings. Why is it the top 17 shows last year were all NFL games? And guess what? They all weren't East Coast teams. Done. Argument over. Finished.
Okay.
Check it.
I'm not going to debate that with you, but my question is, in looking at what the Thursday night numbers were, why wasn't Thursday night affected by that game, because it involved the Ravens? Thursday night's
novelty
numbers were almost 21.
Yep, that's first time through.
Yep.
Okay? It's first time through, and it's also the fact that the Ray Rice thing was covered and it drew eyeballs to the TV set. I'll bet the pregame was good. In terms of the numbers,
the pregame was about 11 million. Yeah, about half of what the game was.
So believe me, that was when the firestorm's going on.
Good point.
Let's see what the Thursday night numbers are this week.
Steve, I just want to say on behalf of both Kevin and me, we are absolutely incapable of overanalyzing anything.
Oh, no.
No, I will overanalyze everything.
All right.
I freely admit it.
I just wanted to hear Kevin say that.
He overanalyzes toenail clippers.
True.
They're just a little too small sometimes.
But this is a great Monday to talk about so many things that are happening in the world of sports.
Oh, it is. There's no question about it. But again, they're down 4 million viewers from last Sunday. You had two marquee names in the NFL facing each other. Hey, it wasn't... I mean, let's go East Coast. Carolina played Atlanta. No go, dog. No go. This was San Francisco 49ers and the Bears. They lost 4 million.
When they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car. Picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself. And negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word. Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motor Studio. 4th Street at Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Joined by the head football coach at Bucknell, Joe Susan. Joe, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, all right. You had a chance to really assess your football team right now. And when you look at them at this stage, what do you like and do you see advancements that you say, you know what, we're building right there and we're in the right spot?
The thing that we were able to do over the bye week is get a couple of our kids that had been injured back, which is a good thing. The Nick O'Brien, who had an injury in the spring that required surgery, proves to you that a 19-year-old heals a hell of a lot faster than a 58-year-old. And he practiced all last week and will practice all this week. He'll start as our boundary corner. He's a very good football player. And then Matt Steinbeck, one of our captains, our weak safety, he'll be back. The thing that I saw that I remarked to the kids both Thursday and last night we went out, the level of physicality has, they've taken over that. And you can tell because it sounds different. And that is what we pride ourselves on in all three phases. And, you know, one of the things that's important about a team as it matures is that it can take positive, constructive criticism. You know, when you tell them they're doing well, sometimes younger teams will say, yeah, we got it, we're here. But as long as they keep working and focused and they can continue that physicality, that is where we want our team to be. And we're a lot healthier than we were the first 2 weeks. The bye week buys into that, but it's also just the way our training staff and our strength staff brings them back. They bring them back when they're ready. They don't force them back or rush them back. And that is one thing that, as a coach, patience is not a virtue. And you know, it's good to have those kids back on the field.
Joe, I want to take the scholarship part from a different point of view. How have you noticed a difference in how competitive practices are in terms of the talent level and ability brought to the table with the scholarships?
What it's done for us, Steve, it's really obviously made our depth a lot better. But what it's also done for us is made our scout teams a lot better. And when you're competing against a higher level of talent during the week, the closer you get to competing against the level of your opponent. Obviously, it never really happens that way, but our scout teams have gotten so much better. And one of the things that we found, too, is that because of our numbers, we do a lot of what we call best look. It's really like an NFL practice where the seconds are providing looks for the first. So the look, the quality of look, the closeness, the proximity to what we're going to see on Saturday has gotten a lot better. That has helped us. And what's nice that we have much more in the way of what I've called playable depth, especially on the defensive front where you want to play a lot of kids. But Our tailback position is strong, and our tight end position is really strong, which really helps the things that we do offensively. And the young guys, they get a lot of reps during practice in the best look periods. And I know that they're not running our stuff, but it's from a fundamental standpoint, it's football. That has really improved.
All right. How well do you feel your staff has been able to mesh together and the importance of that?
We have a couple new guys on the staff, and I think that it doesn't last real long because you spend so much time together. You better get along. And the good thing is that I hear them laugh every once in a while, and to be able to laugh together as staff, I think, really helps. We try to eliminate what I call sidebars. We put things out in the open. We talk about them. I learned that if it ain't broke, break it. Build it up again. You might build it up to what it was, but continually investigating and evaluating what you're doing as opposed to just being concerned about what your opponent's doing. And the bye week really gives you that opportunity to look at what you do well, what you need to fix, and what you might not want to continue to do. And it's given us that chance to test ourselves. The other thing it's given us is a chance to get ahead of our next opponent, Sacred Heart, who is a very good football team.
Yeah.
Guys still there?
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think we just lost Steve here for a brief moment. Hang on with us just a little bit here. On the
I got you,
show.
Kevin.
Yeah, well, you know. That's...
Is he on the beach again?
I think he is. I think he just went on vacation once again. I think he thinks there's a bye week coming up. I'm not quite sure. But, Coach, one of the things that I notice about this football team is, they're always on the sidelines and always discussing something, and it's always about football, whether it's offense, whether it's the offensive guys and the defensive guys. And I notice when you put the benches together, they're slightly at an angle inward, like in a V formation. Talk about the reasoning behind that. Most of the times you go to on the road, the benches are set up straight across. Why the angle? What does that do for this team?
What it does is it gives the kids a chance to hear more than one coach speak. It gives the coaches a chance to have a classroom setting. And one of the things that we don't want to do when the defense is on the field, we don't want our offense watching a game. We want them to prepare for the next series. And that's really hard to do. But it's something that we practice during preseason. And we're very disciplined about doing it during the game. The between series adjustments, the between series communication between players and coaches is critical to staying ahead. Everybody always talks about halftime adjustments. The college halftime is 20 minutes. It's over in a heartbeat. And what we're able to do with our between series communication is have our kids talk to our kids about what just happened, talk to them about what we're going to do. The other thing that we do a very good job of is that the kids that aren't playing are assigned the specific positions to watch. So the right guard, the second right guard, is going to be watching the first right guard. And he becomes a student of the game for that kid. When he comes off the field, tell him, well, I saw this, I saw that. And it really helps when everybody's in the game. The spectators are in the stands. These guys have bought into being in the game throughout the course of the game. We always tell them, too, that the score doesn't count until they chase you off the field. And I try to keep them focused on what they're doing now, what they've got to do in their next opportunity, instead of worrying about the scoreboard. Worry is a waste of time, in my mind. And I'm the one that's aware of the scoreboard. I'm the one that's aware of the clock. And I think we've done a great job of that in being focused on what we're doing now, and that's the only thing we can impact. The past is the past. It'll never come back. The future will be here soon enough. I know I'm getting philosophic, but I'm an offensive line guy.
How well are you doing right now with situational football? You put them in situations, you need them to react. How are you doing with situational football?
We always practice a situation, Steve. There's never a drill that we do related to 11 guys where we're just running plays. And I think that's something that really benefits them. And we'll go through first and second down. We've done that over the past couple of days. And then we'll get into third down. We'll get into red zone. We'll get into short yardage goal line. Coming out, we do 2 minute as much as we can. We've been fortunate to rep 2 2-minute drills where we've resulted in scores in both of our games. And although they're before the end of the first half, that within-game experience pays dividends to the extent of at some time we're going to need them before the end of the game. We had two of what we call 4-minute situations in both of our games where in the first game we get the ball with 5 minutes 36 seconds left. They have 2 timeouts. We run the clock out. The next game we get the ball with 8 minutes and 30 seconds left. We run the clock out. And they understand the situation, and as long as they have experience within the situation when they get to that situation, because it happens in games. And in games, how do we do when we confront chaos? And we try to make practice a confrontation of chaos, so they have the experience of having been there before. And our kids, the other thing our kids have done, Steve, and they've done a great job of it, is being focused in walkthrough. I know Kevin made a point of it, but when I first got here, some of the chatter behind me was about what they were going to do when they got out off the practice field. They were talking about calculus. And we have a thought box that we insert all the things that bother us when we enter the field, get rid of it, and then for the next however many minutes that we're on the practice field, they're talking football, they're helping each other. Our older guys do a very good job of helping the younger guys. And that's the chemistry you want to see. Now, we're dealing with 18 to 23-year-olds. Sometimes their attention spans aren't the best, so we move from drill to drill. We do not condition after practice. We condition within practice. Something right. I got from studying Pete Carrill when he was at Princeton. You never just do the maze drills on a basketball court. And I asked him one time, he goes, if they're not practicing hard, they can't play hard. And it's the within-practice intensity that we focus on, and our kids have bought into it. And, winning a couple games helps, but that's their nature. Their nature has been one of hard work. We're in good shape. We're strong. And going into this next one, we're healthy.
Very quickly, Sacred Heart, you're going to take them on. They are off to a 3-0 start, and they're allowing only 63 yards per game rushing. What are going to be a couple of keys going in that you as a coach will keep an eye on as you get ready for them?
One of the things that when you go up against a team that is as good defensively and we feel we're pretty good offensively, something's got to give. I think we've got to be smart about how we formation and personnel against their defense. And they have been very effective offensively. They want to run it first, and we've always prided ourselves on being able to stop the run. Their quarterback, R.J. Noel, is a threat both with his arm and with his feet. He's better on the move than he is in the pocket. One of our focal points will be to try to keep him in the pocket. And they are a pressure defense. They have not faced in the past two games a downhill run team like us. So we've got to be selective about how we run it, but it goes back to our philosophy that be patient with the twos and threes because they change into sixes and eights. And then as you wear on somebody, we have two big humans at right tackle, Julian Davenport was in my office, said the bye week really helped him. He's back to 320, and I think that's a good thing. Then Rami Kassed's 320. When you get people that size lean on you, it takes its toll. Sacred Heart's offensive line is a big group, too. So something, you know, in a game like this, something's got to give, and we're going to do all we can to make sure they give.
Joe, an absolute pleasure. Best of luck against Sacred Heart Saturday at 1.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you, what was the atmosphere like in New Brunswick this past weekend?
I thought the fans I were around were tremendous that were near us, and I thought it was loud, and they were into it, and the staff at Rutgers could not have treated us, Jack Ham and myself, any better.
They do a very good job. They're good people.
Yeah,
I appreciate it, Steve. And is Kevin traveling with us this weekend?
Yeah, I will be making the trip, yes.
Good. Make sure you don't eat too much on the road.
Don't worry. I'll be sleeping on the way up.
All right. Thank you, men.
Joe, thank you. Joe Susan, head football coach Bucknell, back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, a couple notes about Penn State. I know that the fan base is not exactly enamored with the Wildcat. They are not exactly enamored with the trick plays. And I have not yet talked to John Donovan. I'm supposed to sit down with John Thursday morning and talk with him a little bit. But I think I've got a gut feeling as to what I think I'm seeing. Now, it may differ from the fans' opinion. But I think John is doing everything he can through formation, trick plays, whatever, to find a passing lane for Christian Hackenberg to throw. That's why I think you saw them run the fly sweep action and the flip back to Hackenberg. Now, Christian, I don't think, had his feet set, and he skipped that ball to Kyle Carter. And Kyle Carter was wide open on that play. He probably would have gained another 10 yards, but he was clearly behind the linebacker and clearly in front of the safety. It would have been a nice pitch catch and a play of better than 30 yards. The other one was where he took and he threw it, that lateral or backwards pass to Hackenberg, and Christian then took it and then he loaded it up and threw it downfield. I think John's doing everything he can to try and find a passing lane for him to work, to keep him out of the conventional stuff all the time. And also the fact that a play action fake isn't going to do a lot of good when you're not running the ball as well. I also think that during the course of the game, the Rutgers defense, which Jack and I commented on several times Saturday night about how quick they are, so that's the quickest group we saw all season. What I think a real credit to Dwight Gault and his group is that I think they wore them down and Rutgers got tired. And you look at the last series where Penn State, the touchdown pass that he threw to James, which was a great throw. I mean, he threaded it right in there. Rutgers was late. And then the pass he came back with to Geno Lewis to get the first down, they're playing cover two, and the safety just can't physically get himself over there. He's too tired. I think that was a big part of it. You look at the hole that they opened up in the Belton touchdown run, it was wide open. I mean, I think Rutgers just, Penn State, I think, just wore him down.
I was going to say, Bob, I don't mind the Wildcat or any of these other formations or trick plays, because I think you have to have something like that in there just to keep defenses honest. But more importantly, I think the Wildcat, it works as long as you don't run out of it every time. You have to do something other than just run.
I also think that
which is what they're doing.
Exactly.
I also think having Christian Hackenberg punt the ball might not be the most prudent use of body parts. I think he ought to just stick with his arm.
I like that call, though. I really do. I don't have any problem with that call.
You know what, Bob?
Okay.
I completely understand that completely, especially the result was 5 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is what happened. Okay, I'm guessing without asking James. They put the punt team out there. Rutgers was thoroughly confused. So Rutgers then put, like, okay, and they ran Grant out late.
Right.
And then they were so confused they called a timeout. So then they put the punt group out there. So James decided to put the offense back out there to have them go, oh, what the heck is going on now? But what the idea is, Christian was going to punt. You could tell the way Christian lined up, he's going to punt.
Yeah.
He is further back. So I think that in the thinking of back and forth, everybody was out thinking everybody.
I think that's exactly right. Now, what Penn State did about a dozen years ago or less, around 10 to 12 years, is they bring the field goal kicker in and then direct snap to him and he would pooch punt it. That was a Robbie Gould effective kicking game that...
And Ficken's done that.
Yeah, and Ficken can do it. Yeah, he's just as capable of doing it. That's what I thought they might have done in that situation. But boy, that was a head-scratcher in that game, I have to say. And Steve, well, I agree.
He came out, and Jack and I both said he's going to punt.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't sit there. We didn't think he was going to throw it.
No, and the other thing is I agree with you that the unheralded coach of the team on Saturday was the strength and conditioning coach and his staff. That was huge. Fourth quarter, they were gassing on the Rutgers sideline.
I mean, I think they wore them down. Now, the part about the rivalry, we'll talk about in a little bit, a rivalry between them. Dave Bryant's going to come in and talk about the Steelers in the next half hour. Dave Refs and BTN tomorrow, and then we'll have Tony Knopp on Wednesday.